Hi, and welcome to the magazine Rack on Chris. I'm Ron Pariser. Today, I'll be reading from the March-April issue of Yankee. The first article is written by Nina McLaughlin and titled The Throwback. Using only an axe, Steve Smith resurrects the centuries-old craft of hand hewing to bring both history and new life into today's homes. The thunk comes first, the sound of axe through wood. It's a sound that registers in the body as much as the ears, a sound that one feels in the center of oneself, the exchange between blade and trunk, forces of muscle, bone, gravity, and tree, and then the whisper of wood chip shrapnel landing on the grass. Such is the oral landscape of Renaissance timber in Cumberland, Maine, where Steve Smith practices the craft of hand-hewing, taking the round trunk of a tree and shaping it into a square beam. No power tools, no screaming saws or spinning blades, just his body, the tree's body, the axe. And what results? Structural beams and mantles of white pine, cedar, cherry oak breathe with life and history. They take their places in homes above the hearth or supporting the ceiling and become part of the soul of the place. They draw the eye and more than the eye. People are homesick for imperfection, says Smith. Every mark you see on one of his beams was a decision, part of an intimate connection between man and tree. It's a conversation between souls, he says, and that conversation reverberates, providing a palpable sense of warmth absent from the sterility of industrialized perfection. And it will last longer, too. Smith, 43, talks of the planned obsolescence of modern-day building materials. The stuff I'm making will be here 200 years from now, he says, the wood speaking to the furniture as well as the past in its rough Maine vernacular. It's a legacy item, he says, and to be in a room with wood he's hewed is to step into the river of history. It gives a sense of movement in a way that sheetrock doesn't. Smith's evolution as a hand hewer has its roots in the past as well. His great-great-grandfather drove logs downriver in Maine. Another sold used lumber, and Renaissance timber is based on the farm where Smith grew up. A sense of heritage is important to him, the circle of life and growth and connection. When we met, he just finished building a small cabin playhouse for his two boys and was readying to turn the front section of the dairy barn into a showroom. The trees he uses come from his land or that of his clients. The carbon footprint of his work is zero. We met on a bright, warm September afternoon, the autumn equinox, and Smith was hewing a tree by the barn as the sun made the grasses glow gold in the field to the south. He'd marked the edges and snapped chalk lines down the length of the trunk. He'd stood on one side of the tree and axed a series of wide notches, concave openings every 18 inches or so, and then, with left knee resting on the log and right foot planted on the ground, he raised the axe and brought it down. That great deep thunk, jogging out the sections between the wide, inviting openings, fragments of wood flying through the afternoon light. Broad of shoulder, thick of bicep, Smith does not have the vanity-driven, chiseled form of a gym-goer, but the full-body strength of someone who uses that body for his work. It hasn't always been so. He's relatively new to hand-hewing, having started the business in 2019. Working a white-collar job, he tore his bicep lifting something heavy, tweaked his back logging so many hours at a desk, and worse, knew the staticky fuzz of being in front of a screen all day. Then a book crossed his path, A Reverence for Wood by Eric Sloan, and he watched the hewing process on YouTube. He took down a cedar and gave it a shot. It resonated, he said, while his days in front of a screen blurred together as one. I remember every place I've been in the woods for clients. I remember the bugs, the temperature, the light. Smith carries himself with the humility of someone who's asked himself the hard questions, recognized the painful fact that how he'd understood the world was wrong, and had the courage to make a change. He has the spark in his eye that people who are in intimate relationship with the land have, the glow that comes from the source. We sat on one of his beams, a chipmunk scurried nearby, the back door of the barn framing the field outside, and Smith spoke of the connection the work brings him with the natural world, the tactile satisfactions, the five-sensed attunement to the shifting light, the creatures and the birds, the smell in the air before it snows, the winds speaking through the trees. There is meaning in his work, a sense of peace and place, and each beam he hews communicates exactly that, and the mysteries of our bodies in time. Part of what surprises me about the work, he says, is the sense of wonder it brings, of being fully alive. It reminds me of childhood. I'm interacting with the world on its terms. In addition to mantles and beams, Renaissance Timber offers hewn benches, centerpieces, and trenchers, as well as handcrafted cutting boards. To learn more, go to renaissancetimberllc.com. The next article is written by Kim Knox Beckius, photos by Julie Bidwell. The title is West Hartford, Connecticut. This cultured suburb is the foodie town no one beyond Connecticut's borders is talking about. Yet. I've never been to Paris in the springtime, but I've been to West Hartford. Don't laugh, cry for me. Connecticut's own little slice of Europe is one of those, if you know, you know, places that many travelers overlook. It's equidistant from Boston and New York City, and you'd be hard-pressed to find a few-block area in either metropolis with the variety of cuisine that awaits in this sophisticated suburb with 63,000 residents and two Whole Foods markets. When temperatures nudge up in April, out come the sidewalk tables, the street musicians, the couples of all persuasions strolling hand in hand through West Hartford Center and adjacent Blue Back Square. Up spring the tulips in parks with architectural features and flowering trees worthy of Impressionist paintings. I've known West Hartford for half my life, but I sometimes forget how rich it is in Connecticut-centric shopping, in places to walk, in neighborhoods like Elmwood and Bishop's Corner, with their own character and restaurant finds. How steeped it is in history. The newish commercial district is named for local son Noah Webster's Blue Back Speller. His birthplace is one of 41 notable locations mapped on a weathered sign on South Main Street, not far from his 13-foot marble likeness. Sculpted for the town by Korzak Zielkowski of Crazy Horse Memorial fame. I feel like a slacker as I circle the statue of my dictionary idol, reading his credits. Activist, author, educator, farmer, journalist, patriot, publisher, scholar. There is value in slacking, though, so I've been weekending in WEHA often with the aim of setting to rest a question I hear perennially from Connecticut friends. Why doesn't anybody write about West Hartford as a destination? Truthfully, it's with some reluctance. Can I live with longer lines for my food truck favorites at the year-round gastro park? Oh, hindsight, barbecue. You slay me with your pulled pork mac and cheese. Could it become more challenging to secure a table at Cora Cora, a foodie magnet, since Chef Macarena Lodena's Peruvian dishes earned this unassuming Elmwood eatery? It's in a former McDonald's. A 2023 James Beard Award nomination for most outstanding restaurant in the country? And what about divulging secrets like the labyrinth concealed in the forest behind Copper Beach Institute, a non-religious mindfulness education nonprofit at Holy Family Passionist Retreat Center. It's open free to anyone. Whenever I've lost myself in its twists, aimlessly aiming for the moon gate at its center, it's been mine alone, save for the songbirds, the whistle of budding branches. I'm reminded of the benefits of sharing when I meet my West Hartford-based friend, Jeanette, at Doro Marketplace on a sunny April morning, and we select 8 handcrafted French butter pastries, including a filled, glazed, nut-sprinkled pistachio croissant, puffy enough to fill me all day. On the patio, dressed with lush plants from Mascarillo's, we chat with Doro Restaurant Group owners Dorjan and Mira Puka, Albanian immigrants who've helped internationalize West Hartford Center with their Treva, Italian, Avert, French, and Zahara, Mediterranean, restaurants. As our conversation meanders from the extraordinary food scene to the uniqueness of this community, where art, education, and history are revered, businesses collaborate, and being outdoors is central to life, it's clear I can't keep WEHA under wraps. Just where to send you, though, when in West Hartford Center alone, you'll also find top-notch Afghan, American, Caribbean, Chinese, Japanese, Mexican, steak, and seafood restaurants. Jeanette and I contemplate this at celebrity chef-owned Sparrow Pizza Bar, where toppings like ramps and pesto are splashed to the outer edges of crispy pies. Our debate continues at the West Hartford Reservoirs, where 30 miles of trails are open to walkers, runners, and cyclists. "You've made me fall in love with my town all over again," she says, as we realize, for every recommendation in this guide, we have a handful more. So, visit while West Hartford's still relatively undiscovered, and please let me know if there's an extra seat at your table. Turning back to page 49, exploring West Hartford, eat and drink. Doro Marketplace. The pastries are scrumptious, but don't miss the homemade bagels, fried chicken sandwiches, sourdough pizza slices, and Connecticut roasted Shearwater coffee drinks. DOROMKPT.com. Sparrow Pizza Bar. In a state known for pizza, leave it to Chop Grand Champ Adam Greenberg to prove New Haven style is not the only way to go. The bar here stays lively until midnight on weekends. SparrowPizzaBar.com. Cora Cora. Accolades pour in for this family-owned Peruvian standout. Head chef Macarena Ludena worked her way up from bussing tables in her parents' restaurant, and recently her empanadas, chevises, and fried whole sea bass earned 2023 Connecticut Restaurant of the Year honors. CoraCoraEats.com. Doro Restaurant Group. Any one of Doro's 3 West Hartford Center restaurants would warrant a road trip. How about nibbles at all 3? Mussels aux frites and fondue at Avert Brasserie, ricotta stuffed zucchini blossoms, and the ravioli del giorno at Treva, and seasonally inspired hummus and colossal roasted cauliflower at Zahara. DOROrg.com. Stay. Delamar West Hartford, with its own farm-to-table-focused artisan restaurant and a spa that spoils guests and locals, you could spend all weekend luxuriating here, even though chauffeured tours are available and all of Blue Back Square and West Hartford Center is on your doorstep. Delamar.com. Play. Elizabeth Park, known for its roses, this late 19th century landscape on West Hartford's eastern edge fires up its cavalcade of color earlier than you might expect. A fragrant and photogenic greenhouse show in March is followed by unimaginable deals on unique and heirloom bulbs. By late April, more than 10,000 tulips shimmer and shine. ElizabethParkCT.org. Noah Webster House. Tablet tours allow you to dive as deeply as you'd like into the history and stories that reverberate through the house where America's schoolmaster grew up. purchase West Hartford themed gifts and support programming for all ages, including poetry readings and life on the farm demonstrations. NoahWebsterHouse.org. Shop Moscarillo's Garden Shop. Whatever weather spring may bring, you'll feel sunny and light on a walk through the immense greenhouse at this fifth-generation-owned plant emporium near Bishop's Corner. Moscarillos.com. Best places to live. Whether you're looking to settle into a new home or just a new daydream, our favorite New England towns and small cities are calling your name. Whenever I find myself in a new town, I wonder what it would be like to live there, to settle in, make a friend or two, wander around until the streets become familiar, until it feels, well, like home. The sense of knowing what makes our own best place to live is elusive. Finding somewhere to love, to grow with, to enjoy remains one of life's great rewards. But getting there often means going on a search and being open to new experience. If you have been feeling that tug, even just a bit, to look around, the following pages are meant to pique your curiosity, to crack open the door. We put them together by asking our editors and trusted writers what their own best town would be, knowing all the while that one person's choice is unlikely to be another's. If you love outdoor adventure, New England holds its own with any other region, but you may yearn instead for tranquil ocean waves or for cities that excite you with shows and exhibits and more places to dine than days in a year. You may be drawn to a town settled in the 17th century with homes that look as if they grew from the soil and where history is in the air. Or you may desire a sense of wilderness and solitude on your doorstep. We also understand the reality of 2024. One may simply hope to find a place to live without taking on crushing debt. It's true we cannot talk about any place without considering what affordable means now. Throughout New England, median home prices these days hover near $400,000, a sum that only a decade ago would have seemed outrageous. The region and the country needs a staggering number of new homes, and the tension between knowing that and creating them will likely divide residents of many towns for years to come. But here at least we can shed light on some places that may surprise you with what affordable can offer. This Best Places feature was great fun to create, as we too went on an odyssey to find and select our favorites. And in fact, we could have named 10 times as many worthy towns. This is the region's gift to us all. Mel Allen. P.S. No doubt many of you have best places picks of your own. We'd love to know not only the where, but also the why. Email us at editors@yankeepub.com. Or drop us a line at P.O. Box 520, Dublin, New Hampshire, 03444. More online. After you've gotten the bird's eye view of our best places to live towns, discover our editor's picks for places to eat and things to do, newengland.com/best-places. Warren, Rhode Island. Up-and-coming food town. Population 11,147. Median home 482,000. The food ecosystem of Warren is so rich and varied that to call it up and coming may seem unfair, but in truth, its delights are little known beyond Rhode Island. Just 20 minutes southeast of Providence, Warren retains its small town feel while boasting a lineup of restaurants that hits every cuisine and price point. At the affordable end, you'll find homey diner classics at Rod's Grill, Fish and Chips and Amaral's, and a time capsule of a soda fountain at Deletka Pharmacy, where a one-scoop coffee cabinet is the local go-to. There's a cheese shop, Wedge, an excellent pasta shop, Pricca Farina, a cidery, Sawam's, a brew pub, the Guild, and a terrific coffee shop, Coffee Depot. The only missing element is a great bread bakery, but we see that Bywater, a sophisticated farm and seat-to-table restaurant, has just added a cozy bake shop slash cafe. That said, the best thing about Warren's food scene is that it's still young and affordable enough to allow for quirky hybrids, such as Arc Hive, a bookstore bar, Small Plates Eatery, and the Galactic Theater, a music venue slash micro cinema slash bar. Added to these are eclectic restaurants like the Southern Accented Hunky Dory, Creative Coastal Water Dog, and Artful Medicom Kitchen, where Jacques Pepin was a recent guest. There's even a food incubator, Hope and Maine, that has launched businesses including Yankee Food Award winner Anchor Toffee. Come to think of it, why would those of us who love food live anywhere but here? Amy Traverso. Worthy alternative, Bristol, Vermont. This tiny hamlet punches above its weight with offerings that include Mini Factory, a cafe slash market where Yankee Food Awards honoree V. Smiley makes her extraordinary jams, The Tillerman, an inn whose restaurant centers on wood-fired cooking, and the new Smoke and Lola's, which turns out next-level comfort food. Don't miss the Bicycle Mill Baking Company, which mills its own flour with bicycle power. Population, 3,782. Median home, 382,500. Affordable option, Bath, Maine. Get your foot in the door now, folks. From the local bivalves and natural wine at the woman-owned Oysters, Raw Bar and Bubbly, to the heavenly baked goods at Solo Pane, to the retro pleasures of deli slash scoop shop, The Fountain. This famous shipbuilding town is now on the foodie map. Population, 8,766. Median home, 350,000. Adventure Town, North Conway, New Hampshire. Population, 2,116. North Conway, median home, 445,500 for Conway. While other New England towns also draw an outdoorsy crowd, few can boast the variety of attractions and ease of access as North Conway, a village within the town of Conway and one of the most storied mountain destinations on the East Coast. Popular in the 19th century among hikers who strove to reach Mount Washington's Tip Top House, and landscape artists seeking to capture the grandeur of the White Mountains, North Conway cemented itself as the year-round capital of outdoor recreation when Hans Schneider, an Austrian ski instructor, fled the Nazis in 1939 and settled in the valley. His ski school at Cranmore Mountain, just a few blocks from downtown, helped create an alpine culture that brought vacationers in droves. Ask a local what makes North Conway special today, and they'll likely cite the sheer diversity of outdoor adventures found in and around the village. Novice hikers can trek Black Cap's 2.3-mile trail, while elite climbers can tackle some of the most difficult ice routes in North America. There's mountain biking, gravel cycling, and whitewater kayaking too, not to mention first-class cross-country skiing at nearby Jackson XC, pictured above. Whatever adventure you choose, and wherever you decide to grab your après burger and beer, you will understand as soon as you arrive why North Conway gets people's hearts pumping. By Michael Wetchert. Worthy alternative, Burke, Vermont. The action here centers on the village of East Burke, home to the mountain biking Mecca Kingdom trails, as well as Burke Mountain, whose ski academy helped them train future Olympians such as Michaela Schifrin. Swimmers and sunbathers will rejoice in stunning fjord-like Lake Willoughby half an hour away. Population, 1651. Median home, $525,000. Affordable option, Millinocket, Maine. Having struggled after its paper mills closed, Millinocket is reemerging as a four-season getaway to Forever Wild Baxter State Park, while hosting a popular marathon and new makerspaces right in town. Seeing Mount Katahdin every day provides adventures with both inspiration and motivation. Population, 4,114. Median home, 122,000. Coastal town, Marblehead, Massachusetts. Population, 20,441. Median home, 962,375. A breeze ruffles Marblehead's harbor, having sailed in from across the world. Colorful houses grow mellow in the dusk as vintage-style street lamps glow. A few blocks beyond the section known as Old Town, restaurant stovetops are fired up and diners settle in. The houses look on their historic markers, reminding us that they're here too. Ambrose Gale, fisherman, 1663. Mrs. Ruth Morris, widow, 1750. Seafarers, shoremen, chandlers, and bakers, with so many vintage structures, 300 or so, packed together so tightly you can glimpse a cross-section of centuries at every turn. The town sits comfortably in its deep drifts of coastal history. Sooner or later, you'll stumble across a yacht club here. There are at least six, but maybe that's mandatory in a North Shore town set on a beautiful harbor just 17 miles from Boston. A quick scramble up the hill at Crocker Park, with its broad water views, confirms why Marblehead touts itself as America's yachting capital, as well as the birthplace of the nation's Navy. Duck inside F.L. Woods, a Marblehead institution since 1938, where sailors and aspirational landlubbers can pick up a mariner's jacket or the latest Eldridge Tide and pilot book. Peruse new and classic titles at the excellent Saltwater Bookstore and get a seafood fix with a tuna melt or poke wrap from Shuby's Marketplace. And for a reminder of the mainland's charms, please, oh please, duck into the flower shop, Flores Mantilla, where Buddhas and bird baths disappear into drifts of greenery. Annie Graves. Worthy alternative, westerly Rhode Island. Miles of powdery beaches, a historic downtown and its green centerpiece, Wilcox Park. Star Chef Jeannie Rollins, Ella's Food and Drink, Graysail Brewing, all this creates a small town feel wrapped in coastal beauty that has attracted the likes of Taylor Swift. Toss in the tiny village of Watch Hill and its lovely Napatree Point Conservation Area, and you have reason enough to sing. Population, 18,423. Median home, 515,000. Affordable option, Eastport, Maine. The easternmost town in the country attracts those who prefer the timeless purr of fishing boats to traffic, shopping centers, and cineplexes. The downtown holds handsome brick buildings and an art institute, and here an ethic of preservation and nature conservation runs deep. Population, 1,288. Median home, 214,000. That's it for this installment of the Magazine Rack. I've been reading from the March-April issue of Yankee. I'm Ron Pariser. So long until next time.